I'm pleased to welcome back to the Old Gray Mayors podcast my guest today. He has a long history with the city of Kitchener. The first act was as a longtime senior staff employee, and then the second act as a longtime municipal politician. He is one of the very few people to have the benefit of firsthand experience in both worlds and can offer some interesting insights and perspectives on local issues. In our first show with us, we focused on the early days of his involvement with the city of Kitchener as an outside accountant reviewing all the checks, and then as a senior staff person in finance, and then CAO. In this show, we'll pick up from there and move into his time as a municipal councillor for the city of Kitchener. I'm pleased to welcome back John Gazzola to the Old Gray Mayors podcast. Signora Gazzola, come stai?
Bene, grazie.
Bravo, bravo. So, I was going to say something about the Habs, but I won't get into that with you.
we had our normal visit. There were 16 of us went this year to.
Oh my gosh!
We invited the ladies for the first time.
Ah, beautiful, wonderful, beautiful memories. I know you, the family Gazzola family tradition, to head down. Is it the Bell Center now? To go watch Lake Happy Town play.
Center. It's cursed. I don't
know. Maybe just when you guys show up. But anyway, listen. I want to thank you for coming back again. We had a great talk the first time around, and there was so much history to get into then. And we kind of left it off where you were the interim CAO for the city of Kitchener, and. But you did eventually become the CAO, correct? Like full time?
Yes, I did. I was interim for about a year, and then the position was finally offered to me, and I accepted it. Yes.
But you were doing double duty for that interim period, right?
Yes, I was extremely busy. I was the chief financial officer and city treasurer, and at the same time, chief administrative officer. So it was kept me very, very busy. Yeah, out of trouble.
And you got paid double, right?
No, I did not.
So that's a lot of gapping or savings going on for the city there.
Yes, it was. Yes.
they were fortunate to have you, for sure. One of the things we didn't get to talk about last show was about Center in the Square and all of that coming about. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that. It's kind of an interesting story in terms of it wasn't something that was popular right from the start.
No, the community on the whole was pretty divided, and so were the city councilors of the day. It actually was debated in council several times. It actually, I think it was defeated going forward on at least three occasions. And finally, when there was a change of council and new councilor came on board, it finally did pass by a very small margin.
So it's like fourth time was the charm.
Yes, something like that. Yes.
So interesting story about that too was, I think you had mentioned when we were having a conversation that back in the day when there's, because this would have been a substantial capital project for the city of Kitchener, right?
Yes, it was a very large project. Yes. Yeah.
And what's the process that once that's approved, it has to go through, I think you said an OMB back in those days, the OMB hearing.
Yeah, in those days, on big financial financial expenditures, the OMB could choose. I don't think they did it all the time, but they could choose to have a public hearing in the community. And in this particular case, because there had been so much political on both sides, they decided to have a hearing, which was set up shortly after council had given its final approval.
And one of the interesting things, the mayor of the day was who when this was passed?
The mayor was Morley Rosenberg.
Yeah, and so just tell me the interesting side story about the OMB hearing.
No, I was... at that time, I was the deputy city treasurer. I was fairly new to the working full time at the city, but I had worked on the budget proposal as that was included in our capital forecast. And when the OMB came to town, I was selected by Mr. Eby, who was the treasurer at the time, to go and represent the city to explain that we could financially afford it without any undue impact on our taxpayers. And so the hearing was held, and I was called as a witness. As a surprise to me in the audience was the mayor of the city, Morley Rosenberg, who was attending the meeting as a citizen, and had signed up as a delegate to speak at the hearing. And it was a little difficult for me, so somewhat of a junior staff having to be there arguing with the mayor of the day. But
because Morley didn't support the center in the square.
No, when it was being contemplated, when it was being planned, he was as a total opponent of it, as it were. There were many people in the community that
What's interesting about Morley, though, is that so he's Mayor Rosenberg is at the council meeting where they have the vote. He loses. He's on the losing side of that vote. Then he shows up at the OMB hearing to speak against the proposal.
As a private citizen.
I understand, but that's an interesting situation because usually, yeah, you know, we have these code of conducts now that say you've got to support the decision of council, and you know, how active can you be in continuing to promote your alternative view or opinion after a vote's done? So that was very, very interesting. But he ended up losing, right? OMB approved it.
Yes, and it went forward, and we have today a tremendous facility there that we've had for many, many years. I think it's probably 35, 40 years we've had it, and many years to go. So we're very fortunate.
That's right. Touch wood. Let's go back to the vote, though. How was it? How did the city manage to get a swing vote to support the fourth vote?
It lost very closely, I think, on three different occasions. And finally, in those days, there were 2-year terms. So, But council changed very little, as it does today. So, but in that one particular year, there was a new member, a different member that was elected to council. And in those days, it was a 10-member council plus a mayor. But the members of council were elected at large. So there were 10. From any part of the city. They could all be from the same block.
Right, right. No wards back then. Yeah.
And so there was a new member of council who I actually, at the time, I spent a lot of time with him. He was a novice, really, to politics and everything, and very novice when it came to financial issues. So being in the finance department, I did spend considerable time explaining to him how going forward, how we could afford it, not only the building itself, but to operate the building. And I feel I had some bit of influence on changing his mind or having him vote in what I considered was a positive.
So he voted in favor of the center in the square. So one of the people that supported it and got it over the finish line.
Got it over the line. Yes.
So let's just talk for a moment about center in the square. Just in terms of like the history, you and I had chatted about operating costs, capital costs, where the issues sometimes come up. And as a counselor, you were involved with the center in the square. I think were you on the board for the? Were you a representative?
I was able to be on the board for 2 or 3 years, but after that, I did put my name forward with the councilors, but was unfortunately not able to be picked.
But okay, but you were there, so you have some knowledge about things. So my concern with sometimes with big capital projects is the operating costs. But you pointed out it's not just the operating costs, and sometimes that's not the issue. It's the ongoing capital maintenance of the facility is the issue. Talk about that for a little bit. Well,
Yeah, I think that's the issue that we had at the center of the square when we ran into financial problems. For several years, the councils of the day were really stingy in allocating capital funds to the center of the square. See, the center would get their a lot of their financing directly as a grant from the city, and the center of the square was a separate operation, had their own board of directors, ran their own show, but did get substantial financing from the city. But so the city provided operating funds from year to year, but were really reluctant on forwarding capital funds. And as a result, the operators would divert operating funds to capital things. And eventually the funds started to run out, and that's when they ran into some problems. So
right, you gotta maintain the facility if you're going to use the facility.
Yes, especially a facility that gets well used.
Okay, right. It makes me think that sometimes we get into large projects like an arena or community center, and we're not really thinking about that 40 or 50 years down the line when maybe something needs to be significantly repaired or replaced, and there's not money being set aside for those future projects.
No, that's why in dealing with the capital forecast, one of the things when I was back on staff and dealing with the capital forecast, when a project came to be placed into the capital forecast, we not only had to provide all the financial information for the capital project, but also they had to provide information on how it was going to operate and what it was going to take to operate in the future. So there are two parts. Sometimes the second part was forgotten.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's sort of like flip the first page shows you all the great things that people want to build. Flip the page over so you can see how it's all going to be financed or funded, right? And that's the part we always forget about. Just back to the center and the square, when you said you were able to build it, was it borrowed funds or funds you had in reserve, or how were you able to finance the construction?
In those days, we were still, we hadn't tightened up on our borrowing. If you remember that I previously stated how we went from a position to where we were borrowing money, that we went and basically paid cash for everything. Well, at this point in time, we were still borrowing for things. So some of the funding would have come from borrowed monies. There were some reserves had been set aside, but I think the bulk of it came from borrowing. And there were substantial senior government grants too at the same time.
Okay, so let's move ahead now. You're acting CAO, become the CAO. During this time, was the we just want to touch on the universities and the core, that situation. Was that happening while you were CAO?
Yes, they were. It was happening around the area. I know that it had happened in Cambridge. The School of Architecture from the University of Waterloo went to Cambridge. It started to come up then, but no funding was provided prior to my being on council. I know that at the time when I was CAO, we were desperately looking for whatever development we could get in the downtown. And I know at one point the Conestoga College, for example, wanted to take over a vacant building in the downtown, and they wanted to borrow some money from the city, and I wasn't able to get it to move forward. They weren't looking for a grant. They were just looking for some inexpensive borrowed money.
So they would have paid back. So they just wanted a low interest rate as possible, but would have paid back some money.
That's right. Yeah, they weren't looking for a handout at all. So
I guess that didn't happen.
No, it didn't go forward. So nothing went forward then until I think it was the third or fourth year that I was on council that they came out with this plan to lure some post-secondary education into the city, into the downtown.
Well, Laurier, but Laurier came. Who came first? Was it School of Pharmacy or Laurier, the social work school?
And it was the School of Pharmacy first that was the first one on. Yeah.
Okay. And that's on the old Epton B.F. Goodrich property. It's where my dad used to work for 30 years.
Is that right?
We were able,
and I was the CAO at the time. We were able to get Epton, and Epton was owned by B.F. Goodrich, and B.F. Goodrich had provided funding to clean up environmental problems whenever they moved out. They had the funds prepared. We were able to get B.F. Goodrich to tear that building down and clean it up, and it was at no cost to the city.
Yeah, that was excellent. Did the city acquire the property then, or what happened?
Yes, the city had acquired at that point because they were it was a tax sale pickup sort of thing. But we would be reluctant in a case like that to acquire the property because it costs so much money to tear it down clean it up. But we were able to get, I can remember working with the lawyers from B.F. Goodrich to where they came in, and they were good civic citizens where they paid to clean it all up and tear it down and take it away.
Yeah, that's the big unknown, right? If you buy something like that, what's the ultimate cost going to be? And that's a bit of a scary situation. But let's just talk about universities in the core, though. What was your general position about that as when you were on council?
No, when I was on council, the mayor of the day came out with this big proposal to basically provide the University of Waterloo with some $40 to $50 million taking into account the interest on that, and in order to get them to bring the School of Pharmacy, and eventually they got involved with McMaster too, who brought the School of Medicine. They're part of the School of Medicine, but we paid tremendously for that compared to Cambridge, who did the same thing with the School of Architecture from the University of Waterloo, and they were able to provide them with assistance, a grant, which they paid over to the university over a 15-year period of time. And if you can imagine that, that was by the time they got their 15th year payment, it was worth very little. But that helped them, and they were able to come in and establish their School of Architecture. So everybody started to follow that example, and so we tried to do the same thing. But we gave away too much. I did not support it. I was the only one on council at the time. There were six councilors and a mayor. I did not support going to that extent.
What you're saying, I guess, is you're not opposed to the idea of assistance. It's just the amount of the assistance.
That's right, I think you have to be cautious too when you start getting into these fields that are financed by senior governments, that we didn't have the tax base that we could do it, but I was prepared to go for some assistance to get them there, but not to that extent. The people in the city of Kitchener are still paying for that loan, that gift to the University of Waterloo.
I understand what you're saying. I mean, obviously, a benefit to the core. The question is, how much should a municipality take on when there's something that's sort of like a provincial area of responsibility, which is something we deal with now on homelessness and other social issues. In our most recent budget, we were spending $180 million on issues that were provincial initiatives, but were on the local levy. So,
we've shown that the province that we would stupidly pay for them. So they love us down there. They'll put your picture on the wall if you look after paying all their expenses.
Okay, hey, let's talk about for a second. So let's step back for a second. Then this transition from CAO to councillor. And so whatever you want to talk about with respect to that.
I was let go early by the city, earlier than I wanted to. I had been in public practice, had no pension from being in a public accounting practice, and I wanted to get 30 years in with the city of Kitchener, and I got it. I got 26 in, and they asked me. We went our different paths, which is fine. When you're at the top position like that, you have to be prepared to have differences of opinions. But I came from the old school, where a handshake was all that you needed when I got into the position. Right. And so I didn't spend time getting big contracts as to what would be paid to me in case of a dismissal and all right. of that. I mean, that I could never imagine that. Well, I was dismissed, and I had made no arrangements for what might come to me on a dismissal, and I had hoped to get to age so that I had 30 years in on my pension. But at the end of 26, I was told to leave, and I left.
Okay, and, so just quick, I just want to, we're going to continue that, but I just want to mention quick. So staff, though, at the city would have like an OMERS pension or something like that you'd be contributing to?
Yes, they were. I was able to get 26 years into my pension. And the way OMERS work, you got 2% for each year, so I was still able to get a 52% pension.
But what I wanted to mention more about was that councillors don't at the area municipalities are, I don't believe they're part of the OMERS pension. Because I know when I was at North Dumfries, I wasn't. But when I was at the region, as a councillor, I was included in the OMERS pension.
Yeah, they are now. They are now. They were when when I was on council, and that's another sore spot that I don't want to go there because I was too old. I was deprived of having the same. Oh. Give me funding to go like they did with other. So my last dozen years on council, I was actually paid less than the other councillors because I was too old.
Interesting. We hadn't even talked about that. So it's something to think about in the future. So, but you didn't leave without letting your thoughts be known though.
No, I I did go back to a Monday night public TV night on council and explained how my disappointment, I set out a number of things that I had done as a staff member and as a CAO, and I felt that I hadn't been treated fairly, and I let them know about it, and.
But there was a famous gesture that happened. I was there that night. Your son Mike had called me and said something's happening. So I came out to watch, and I was up in the upper balcony looking down when that was going on. So what was the gesture?
Well, I had my 25-year pin, which I even had a little speck of diamond in it that I I gave it back to them. I said, I'm not prepared to wear this. And so I turned it back and that was it. So. A couple of years, that was in 2001. In 2002, a vacancy came up. The councillor, Jim Ziegler, councillor for Ward 3, moved on to higher positions, and the seat became vacant. And so the council of the day, who had their choice, they could have picked someone else, they could have appointed someone, but they decided to have a by-election. And in those years, the council was only a two-year term, and so it was halfway through, but they decided to have a by-election. And I for whatever reason, I still felt I was young, and I went down without even talking to the family. Went down and signed up to run, and that's
what I was going to transition to. Was it's interesting, as you pointed out, that so this opening came up because Mr. Ziegler became a justice of the peace.
Yes.
And so I got elevated to that position, and this opening comes up. And did you think, like, you were thinking about this on your own, obviously, because you said you didn't tell the family, but what was your thought process here?
No, I thought that I was still young, and I thought I know my way around City Hall. Why don't I throw my name to the ring? And it wasn't a matter of getting back at anybody, because by that time I had forgotten all of that. But I thought, why not? What does it hurt? I think I had to pay $100 to sign up, but you got back if you got a certain percentage of the vote.
Yes.
And then in the end, it ended up 13 people running for that.
You told me that there were 13 running, and one of them was, did you say some former politicians, or one was a former
former cabinet minister, former minister of energy for the province. So,
Will Ferguson.
Will Ferguson, yeah. So I thought for sure when he threw his name into the ring, that for him, because he was, I like Will Ferguson. He was a street fighter. He worked hard. He had his ways of doing things, but I thought I would have totally supported him. And it's an interesting thing. I ended up winning that by-election by 38 votes. It was a real
was Will the second place? Who came in second?
He was second. And he was the only one of the 13 who called me up and congratulated me.
You've been in a lot of elections, so he knew that's the appropriate protocol. Very interesting. So just think, it's interesting, if they had gone the appointment route, because there's only 1 year left, so some people would say, well, why don't you just appoint who came in second last time or something like that? Yeah. You wouldn't have been in municipal politics.
I wouldn't be here, no.
because you actually ran, you didn't live in the ward.
No, I've lived 60 years now in Ward 8. Well, I was in Ward 3. I always argued with the people when I said, you don't need me as a neighbor. You need me as someone who can advocate for you. And I know my way around City Hall.
So. Yeah. That's it. There you go. You got into politician mode pretty easily there. So your counselor in your ward, where you live, was Jeff Lorenz at the time, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And incumbency is such a big thing. It's hard to beat someone who's been there for a long time.
Well, that's where my term limits came in.
I'll get to that in a sec. But I just want to point out, how many elections did you end up running in?
I ran over my 20-year period. I ran in six. I signed up for six elections. Now, I was acclaimed in one of them, so I didn't. And I came within an hour of being acclaimed in two others. So
Two others. So, but all six, you won all six elections.
Yes.
So you put in 20 years as a counselor and 26 years as a staff person. But before that, as a private in private practice, you were also how many years were you involved with the city of Kitchener?
Over 50 years, because I spent 5 or 6 years before going to the city as their external auditor.
We talked about that last show. Yeah. I know, but it's a lot of years. But let me just ask, so why don't you tell me about your position on term limits then?
No, I felt after 2 or 3 years being on council, I saw that when you were elected on City Kitchener Council, to this day, it's like a life appointment. And I thought, you know, you should be able to maybe have. And by that point, they were coming up we went from a 2-year term to a 3-year term to a 4-year term. By that point, I came out with the proposal similar to parts of the world where people have a 10-year limit. You can be on council for 10 years, and then you have to leave for at least a year and come back. What it does, it opens it up. It changes the people that are involved with council. It gives more people an opportunity. And if you're still interested, my role position was that you have to change from that. You could say run for mayor, or you could run for the school board. So you can still remain in the public view, but it gave other people a chance to do that. But
so I see what you're saying. Like you say 10 years, but now with 4-year terms, would it be like two or three terms before you had to move on? What would you say now?
It would be 2-year terms. And if you got into a by-election halfway through, you could do 10 years.
I got you. So it's like the by-election wouldn't count, and then it's the next two terms, whatever that would be. And then you could run for mayor, for example, and then that opens up a spot.
That's right. Yes, and then you could come back.
So I guess and you're right. We haven't. It's almost like we've seen mayors change within the region. I know I went through that myself when I ran for mayor and beat the incumbent. But you don't really see a lot of that change, I guess, at the council level in terms of incumbents losing, unless, for example, there's a Rim Park like situation.
Well, I was going to that, but that's Waterloo. Waterloo often changes. Yeah. Waterloo often cleans house. I think I can name you the losses that Kitchener have had in the last 50 years.
On one hand. No, I know what you're saying. But what about the argument that, because I can think of some people, like yourself, who have a lot of experience and knowledge, that some would say that you need that experience and knowledge on council.
You do, but there's a lot of people with experience and knowledge that come, people like to see change. People like to see change in faces, and I know I took it for years because I was old, and when you're old, you take a lot of slack.
But when you're old, you know a lot. So there's a benefit there, right?
But it gives, it's nice to see people step down and give somebody else a chance, an opportunity to do it.
And then, my view on elected office was like, the way I treat it is like, if I was working for some charitable organization, or not working, but volunteering with a charitable organization, and you're on the board, a lot of them, after 8 years, you have to move on. You can't stay beyond eight years.
Right.
Yeah. Like the Catholic Charity Board I was on for 8 years, and then you had to move on. They had to bring in new people. And I always felt that 4 years or 8 years of volunteering at any particular place was a lot. And time to move on and let some other people with fresh ideas, fresh energy, just come on board and pass the torch.
What happens is when you don't go in that direction, that people who are on in elected positions just don't want to leave it. They will bend over backwards not to leave it. It becomes more important to them to be able to come back and be elected again as to doing good work for the people they're representing.
Yeah, I think after a while, it's hard to always come up with new ideas. I mean, after a while, it's like, you got to move on, and maybe what happens is, I'm just wondering, like you come in as a counselor with ideas, eventually you don't have as many ideas, and now staff has all the ideas.
we're beyond that point in locally.
Well, we'll talk about the budget process. So listen, now you're elected, you're there. I mean, with your background, you'd be a natural for chair of finance committee.
Never made chair of anything. I shouldn't say that. I was on, there was a system where they needed a member of council to sit on various committees. And, I can remember, they had a committee there that looked for cycling committee. and nobody wanted to take the job because it was a new committee and everything. And I said, well, I'll do it, And I went to this this new committee, and when I was there, they I was a member of council, so everybody said, you know, I should be chair. And I said, no, I this is, you know, I like to see people. I'm already involved. I've got right. I would like to see a member of the public that have volunteered to become chair. I think, you know, and I said the chair should be wide open to everybody. Don't just point to the members of council,
because
they've got a lot of other duties they should be looking after. So I did get a chance to become chair, which I turned down. But that's the only chair in 20 years. But
I was going to say, you on cycling. I remember there was a time you were biking all over the place.
I joined and I went into it wholeheartedly. At the time we had two cars. I ended up trading one of the cars in, and from then on to this day, less to this day, I now ride a stationary bicycle in the basement every day. But for a long time, I lived on the bicycle. I did everything on the bicycle.
So. Okay, so I'm not going to say you traded in Mrs. Gazzola's car. Okay, so let's talk about property taxes. Okay. And the discussion I want to have is, because myself personally, as a person now who before made decisions about property taxes and makes decisions about property taxes now, when I go into it, you know, I'm considering the CPI, but I'm not always feeling I'm bound by the CPI, the Canadian price index or consumer price index or the inflation rate. And yet you hear people that'll say, we can't go beyond the inflation rate in our property tax increases. So tell me, where does that come from, that this is the marker for property tax increases?
Well, I think it's a good marker for everything. And I've said many times, running a city is like almost like running a house. You have to live within your means. Okay. That was one of the principle I ran in the election, living within your means. Not going into debt, not, you know. And if you live within your means, the fact of life is that there is inflation. You can't get away from inflation, and you have to deal with that. But if you know that everything's going up a little bit in price, well, you have to be prepared to deal with that in a household. Either your salary or your income's got to go up, or something that you don't really need has to go by the buy. And it comes down to the other principle, and it's the difference between want and need. And we want a lot more than we really need. And so we always follow that. When I was in the 30 or so years that I was on staff, we followed that principle that if we could come in with a tax rate that was at or below the inflation rate, the consumer price index, we felt that was a fair deal for the people in the community. Yeah,
that's because people can relate to that issue, I guess. They're going, well, my costs are going up that high. Yeah. How come your costs can't stay within that number?
Yeah, they understand that the price has to go up, but if you control it, they can live with that.
Okay, so let me clarify want and need. Want is not good. Need is what I need to have.
there's the people. We would go out and talk to the public about a project that was coming up. And that was the idea. Go, you've got to sit down and let the public have their say at something. And if you're going to build a new community center in the area, you go and talk to the people. Well, the people would come in and tell you a million things that would be nice to have, okay? And but then you had to sit down and work at it and decide, okay, these are nice to have, but what do we really need? How do we get the cost of this thing down so that we can pay for it and live with it? So
One of the benefits with the city of Kitchener was the gas utility, right? In terms of providing funds.
Yes, and I'm pleased to say that I think I had some input into keeping that gasworks here over the years. I know that on at least two or three occasions when I was on the other side of the fence working on the staff side, that we had to do several mayors of the day wanted to get rid of it, make a fast buck, which they could have spent quickly. And we had to argue about it, and we were the only community that kept their gasworks. All the communities around us had their own gasworks at one time or another.
Right.
They ended up selling them to Union Gas or somebody else, but the city of Kitchener kept theirs. And because of that, we have a real benefit on it, in that I'm not even sure how we get away with it, in that we run it as an operation. We make a tremendous profit. We don't even pay corporate income taxes on the profits we make. The people in this community are really fortunate. We end up getting a 10% reduction in our property taxes because of the impact of the gasworks that we own.
So how many municipalities have their own gas like works now in the
only
Ontario?
The only one really is Kitchener. Now Kingston is the only has a little part of their city, but not the entire city. A little part of their city that is on gas, so they to some extent have a gasworks. But the only real one is the city of Kitchener.
Let me ask you this question then, because of your vast experience on the staff side and the political side, and I only know what I see with respect to budgets in this era now. What is the role of staff and council with respect to creating the budget as you saw it years, decades ago versus today?
Yeah, back in the day when I was on staff, staff would bring forward a budget, but which councils of the day would spend two or three full days debating and delivering and working on the budget. Those were in the days of paper. Everything was printed on paper. We would send home background information. We would stack the books two or three feet high, full of background information, which the counselors of the day delved into and spent a lot of time. And then during the budget process, there'd be a lot of changes. There'd be adding this, subtracting that. There'd be a real input by the politicians. I can remember almost the last 10 years that I was on council as a member of council. The budgets were staff budgets. Council really had very little to do with them. Council really just rubber stamped what staff brought forward. I said I couldn't believe there were 5 or 6 years where we made not one change in what staff had brought forward. I said, well, the staff must have brought forward something that was perfect. We couldn't find one thing.
Did you try and make some changes? Did you try and go back to how it used to be?
Oh man, did I try to make changes. There's no one in this city that's lost more 6-1 or 10-1 votes. I tried and made them with good solid background, because I'd been there, done that, knew what it was all about. But I couldn't.
We'll get you a mask, like the Lone Ranger. You're the lone dissenter.
I guess I didn't have very good persuasive. I couldn't persuade any. I guess I'm too much of a black and white. Things are.
Let's things, uh, let's Yeah, I got you. Let's talk about reserve accounts for a second, because you had some thoughts on how that's evolved over time too, with reserve. Like, reserve accounts are accounts that are funds set aside by council. So, you know, whether through development charges, some reserves are flexible or discretionary. Some reserves are fixed for their purposes, and you don't have any discretion on. But certainly, that's something that I've been talking about most recently on council, where I'm at. But tell me about your thoughts on reserve accounts.
No, I've been following you, and I think you've come up with some good arguments, and that our police services have so many reserves, it's ridiculous. Reserves are a good thing to have. Reserves are wonderful. And if you can afford them, by all means, you should have them. I know when I was earlier working and had to bring home the paycheck, and you had to decide what to do with the paycheck. Would have been really nice to put things into reserves, but at the end of the day, I needed the money for groceries. So you can't deal with reserves. So, you know, so reserves are good if you can afford to do it. But when you start having to increase your taxes to set away reserves, well, that's the time when you got to really start looking at it closely. Now, we ran the city of Kitchener for many, many years without a lot of huge reserves, and we managed. Things were tight. Things were tight, but you when things are tight, you have to really inspect things, review things before you go in one direction or another. When you've got lots of reserves, you make decisions very quickly. The money's there. It's easy to do. Things move very quickly. But if things are a little tighter, you have to look at it. What do we really need? What do we want? And all that. So all of our local municipalities, and including the region, especially, have tons and tons of reserves, more reserves than I think we really need. And on top of that, we have what I call hidden reserves. These reserves, they're money, unspent money that sits in accounts that then is there for staff to do almost as they wish with. So,
well, as they wish, subject to council approval.
Well, as they wish. If money's there, if money's in an account, if a project's been done and money's in an account, it's there. So 2 years later, somebody comes along with something that they want to deal with. They say, "Well, we'll charge it to that account. There's money in there." It's charged to that account. Council has no idea. Council has no idea what's going on.
Just to clarify, council may not know the funds are there. Staff identifies that the funds are there and council approves it then, but they've found the funds that were needed for the project.
Yes. In some cases, they find the funds for a project that's needed, but in some cases, the funds are expended on things that never gets back to council. I said if I could be mayor for 3 years, I could promise no tax increases, because there are enough reserves and hidden reserves to plan that, no tax.
That would have been an interesting platform. No property tax increases. Now, that you know, there have been some mayors in the past that have used assessments as the basis for covering any increases that are needed, and having like I know in North Dumfries, it was about a 14-year period of zero property tax increases. I mean, is that a viable approach?
No, because you were growing. There was, you see, that was growing slowly and surely. When you grow, you get new assessment brings more property taxes, which allows you to do more things. Now, when you start to want to, I've always said we need to grow. You always need to grow. But we don't need to grow by leaps and bounds. You need to grow gradually. But when you want to grow fast, and when you want to have a seat at the big table next to Toronto, well, then you start forgetting everything, and growing is the only thing that matters. You know, and what happens with all of this growth, the poor taxpayers, the little mom and pops that have paid property taxes for years are all of a sudden finding out they can't afford to live in their house. And when they get to my age, they have to move out because they can't keep up with the property taxes.
There's no place to move to.
That's not right. No.
So, okay, let me, I just think you just mentioned that just something just popped in my mind when you mentioned about the seat of Toronto. And it's this idea. I just want to touch on amalgamation for a second. And your view on that. So, and what I'm getting at is, you know, we've had recent discussions about that in the community. And I personally have the view that if we're going to continue to compete with the province, et cetera, and other communities like not Toronto so much, but like Mississauga, Brampton, those places, we're better off as one amalgamated entity with 650,000 people than seven separate entities with anywhere from 10,000 to 220,000. What's your view on amalgamation now that you've sort of been through the all of this?
Well, I'll tell you, it's quite a change. After 50 years, my thinking is different now. I was always against it because I felt that it moved the taxpayer away from where the power is, and it was so if a person had a problem, you know. Right now, when you're in a smaller community, it's easy to call up a counselor and whatnot. But if you have one big city, and it's that much harder for the poor individual on the street to deal with the issues. Who do you go to? Who do you go to that's going to listen to you? Okay. That was my viewpoint, but recently I have changed it because. We used to have seven area municipalities, all who were a little bit different. They did things differently. They vied for one another to see who could do the best job. But we now have seven municipalities who do totally exactly the same. During COVID, it really came to me during COVID. Nobody issued a press release without checking with the other seven area municipalities and the region. Nobody opened a thing. Nobody did anything. And that's carried on. Now now everybody does everything exactly the same. Okay, now it's time to put it all together. And you put it all together when everybody's doing exactly the same thing. When you put it all together, it's less expensive for the taxpayer.
So you're basically duplicating the administrative process. So what's your bottom line on this then?
You don't need to do that. We're not duplicating. What is it when you do it seven times over?
It's wasteful. You know, so basically, you're saying you're pro amalgamation now.
Yeah, no, I think now we're at the size now And we're that challenging to be different and to do things a little different is gone now. Now we don't dare do anything different in Kitchener than they're doing in Waterloo or in Cambridge and whatnot. So we're all going to do exactly the same thing. Now it's time to put it all together. Yeah, I've changed my position on that.
So, okay, interesting. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, I got to ask you. How come you can put your leaves on the street, but your son Mike can't put the leaves on his street, and you both live in Kitchener?
It's a ridiculous thing that I can't explain. I know I got involved with it on council a number of years ago, where it's basically against the law to put anything on the road, and so by allowing people to put their leaves on the road, they're going contrary to the provincial laws, but they're prepared to turn their heads on it. About 10, 12 years back, council dealt with it and they made a decision to not allow anybody to put their leaves on the road, to make it a level playing field across the entire city. And it was dealt with at committee and it passed. But by the time it came back for council's consideration, a number of members of council who got pressure from their residents, changed their mind. And
Hold on a sec. Is that falling the need or the want category?
Well, that's totally a want. Okay, because more than half the city have no choice. So they can live with bagging their leaves. Why can't the other half live?
Right.
And I live with it in a place with a lot of trees, and it's very easy to just throw them on the road. But yeah. I voted in favor of doing away with that. That's
that thing would block bicycle lanes, and
it's terribly unsafe, and so many other things, and it's very costly the way the city picks it up now. And we seem to do a really poor job. We have got that big dirt moving equipment on our street with graders and all that picking up leaves. Whereas if you look at another part of the city, we tell the people, put your leaves in the bags, and we'll pick them up in the bags. But
we
don't have a level playing field.
I guess so. You can fight City Hall.
You can fight City Hall. I've always believed you get enough people together, you can fight City Hall. Yes.
I always say, if you show up with a baby and a buggy and some seniors at a council meeting, you got a good shot at it.
you get people. You can fight City Hall if you're determined enough. So
John, tell me, how did you feel about your time as a councillor overall?
I think about it. I'm pleased. I think I didn't accomplish startling things, but my belief was living within your means, and I pushed that. Transparency was important to me, and I pushed that. I asked a lot of questions, which I think encouraged a lot of other people to ask questions. I pushed on the financial end of it. I really feel that some of the increases in tax rates over the years could have been much higher had I not been there preaching a different message. I didn't accomplish anything startling, but I was there working, worked hard for my constituents, and I enjoyed doing things for them. As I said, I knew my way around City Hall. I enjoyed that, and my constituents appreciated that. And it's very encouraging to work hard for your constituents, and then for them to appreciate it. Sometimes they even acclaim me when the election comes out. That's quite satisfying. So I'm pleased. Yeah. I'm pleased with my 20 years. Nothing flashy. But consistent. I always felt in my role when I was on the other side as a staff member and as a council, nothing flashy, but nothing earth shaking. We never had any rim parks in our community.
Yeah.
We never had any rim parks.
No, congrats on that. So I guess we could say John Gazzola, fighter for the little guy, one street at a time, one voter at a time, and always shining a light on what's happening at City Hall.
Yes. I am pleased with that. Yes.
Okay. Well, listen, John, thanks for the time today. Really appreciated the opportunity to reconnect and pick up from where we left off last time. And I'm not going to say go Habs go, but I wish you all the best.
thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to relate a little bit of history. I think it's important to know where you've come from so you know where you're going. So Thank you very much. Try not
to repeat the mistakes of the past.
That's right. Yes.
All right. Thank you. Take care. Say hi to Mama G for me.
I will do that. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye now.
All right. Thank you for listening to another edition of the Old Gray Mayors podcast. If you have any ideas for stories or people you would like us to interview or reach out to, please feel free to contact us. And thank you again.